Okay, everybody, we're going to start the open mic online on Zoom with Alexandra.
Line 14. Bring it on, life. Every precarious safe haven, every toiling accomplished goal. Arcadians, children of the pre-lunar era. Your struggles, my struggles, entwining around each other. Pain sweetening through sharing. Waiting through centuries of darkness for a miracle to shine. Beams of dreams escaping the narrow bars of reality. Your labored sweat, our bitter patience, dissolving our struggles into the salt of the tear. Bring it on, life, every shatterable righteous law, every daggered jubilant victory. Agatho demons, children of the absolute word. Your truths, my truths, powering around each other. Eternal debt for the unjust. Eternal gratitude for the just. Lightning condemnation of injustice. Divine mortality determined to win all battles. Fiery anger sung by muses, kindling our truths into the tip of the flame. Bring it on, life, every fluctuating precious bond, every undulating sweet desire. Eterluminescence, children of the solar cosmos. Your light, my light, shimmering around each other. Distancing in cold alienation. Connecting in warm communion. Our sacred mating reflecting wavelengths. Invisible bright frequencies, shapes and colors becoming visible. Absorbing and transmitting photons, rippling our light into the foam of the wave. Bring it on, life, every delicate, fine-spun artistry, every frenzied, blissful awakening. Dionysians, children of a primordial orbit, your passions, my passions, creating around each other. Art flooding with hues of emotions. Every aesthetic touch guaranteeing endless splendor. Ideal voices and thoughts. Soaring like seagulls between land and sea. Carrying elevated ideas through space and time, raising our passions into the upsurging of the spirit. Bring it on, life, every vulnerable, steadfast vision, every evanescent, ultimate flight. Colonians, children of the winged evolution. Your quintessence, our quintessence, goldening around each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra. We're going to stick to Zoom because both Alexandra and Pam Campbell are on different time zones. So next we're going to have Pam Campbell, please.
Thanks, y'all. My courtyard window opens to American sycamore, molted gray branches, flush with pale green serrated leaves, stretched beyond my fifth floor walk up. American tree sparrows toss tea-leaved back and forth. I think of Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window, only I have no binoculars. My hazel 2020s pan 180 degrees past wide open windows and watch twilight disappear. Trumpet scales sun splotch Brooklyn red brick sunrise, teases interior movement. Fourth floor windows clothesline cranks private to public space, flaps personality. Paint stained carpenter jeans turned inside out so pockets dry, multitask in my imagination. Hourly wage earner by day, color bubbled graffiti artist by night. White bleached mended sheets sag the middle and socks one missing off balance the ends. Second floor window frames a snowy haired canary yellow t-shirted man. He leans full torso out and calls a baritone rich hola to passerbyers below. He keeps faithful watch, misses no one. Midday, a groceries bearing octogenarian waves him ni-ha and bump thuds her cart up three flights of stairs. In the cool of evening, gastronomic geography draws me to window perch. Sweet, yeasty aroma of babka, onions sautéed with garlic, slow-cooked frijoles, and bucatini con le sorde, oregano rosemary tanged. Trumpeter circular breeze lip trills, clean and smooth, sorrow-laced lows, bridged high, our nocturne, alleluia. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pam. Next up, we're going to have Sean Lee Lynch.
Thanks. So in Dublin Airport, there is a series of billboards. I don't know, are they in other places, but they're there. And they are of Irish mythological women, and inserted into them is a Skoda car. And the first two times I saw it, I didn't like it, but the third time I saw it, I had this real visceral reaction to it, and I wasn't sure why exactly. And then I looked it up, and on the Skoda website, it said, "We sought to represent these legends in a more contemporary way than the usual depictions. We emphasized their admirable qualities of strength, courage, and perseverance." So I wrote this poem about that. The Morrigan, phantom queen, goddess of battle, slaughter, and death, turned rivers red with blood of men. Her black wings evoked fear in all those who felt her near. A shapeshifter, could turn from crow to wolf to eel at ease. I guarantee she would have no need or urge to drive a Skoda Superb, Ireland's best large family car. Her sister, Maka, haunted battlefields, inciting madness. After combat, she collected the severed heads of enemies. Maka's acorn crop. Under another guise, she was forced to run miles, outpacing the king's horses in a cruel race she was made take at 9 months pregnant. Well, that took its toll on the ground she folded and died there in childbirth. But not before she could curse all the men of Ulster that in their time of need, they would feel her agony for generations 9 times 9. With that in mind, it's preposterously whack to put her next to a Skoda Enyaq, the best family EV. Bridget, patroness of many things, healing, poetry, learning, driving an SUV, not one of them. Queen Maeve, she who intoxicates, vengeful, competitive, and fierce. She led armies of men into battle and bed, hell-bent in pursuit of control. I know she would not have drove a Skoda. It's a violation of their legacy, an attempt to domesticate them, to condense to a sugar-coated version. Leave them have their fury, tempers sharp as spearheads, nerve as strong as iron. Their words and misdeeds should not be bent like reeds to recode the ohmstones of their grief. Do not file off their sharp edges to make something pretty and palatable. That's been done to us long enough. These warriors were ferocious, full of magic and power. Under fire, they raged and screamed. They did not cool to fragile glass, delicate and dainty. They had pain, deeper than the Shannon. Crimson blood, red fury, curses on their lips, lust on their hips, could summon rain and fog, overcame the odds and showed women what they could be. But, and this is key, they did not drive Skodas.
Thanks so much, Shauna. And she's off to get her bus. Thanks so much. Ryan. Ryan. You're after breaking our microphone, I'd say.
Thank you, though. It's okay. This is a new poem. I only wrote it on the weekend, so we'll see how it goes. It's called Origin Story. I am from the black bones of the earth, pressed trees of prehistories hacked from the marrow deep, brought up into the night to burn, dust from the amputation, petrifying inspiration. I am from the Ribbon River wrapping the valley floor, the rock where Merlin laid his head to dream, where a martyr's artery gushes gently over smelted sulfurous stones and submarine shopping trolleys. I am from the Roman road, relentless as the geometry of conquest, scored into the hillside with gladius and pilum. I march its creases daily through the map of memory. I am from the crumbled castle crushed on the clifftop, the vaulted arches in its remaining ward, and the bleak song of the keening, battle-sharpened wind. I am from the once lusty town, the pitted iron giant that beats against its hollowed-out heart with an untempered fury born of unforgotten furnaces and a rusting will. I am from the chain link between decades of beads, comfort of a thorny crown, pressed patellas in a pulping pew, silencing communion, cleaving the mouth's trussed roof. Crisp Corpus Christi processions, a swivel-eyed display of bleached identity. I am from rock buns and scones, baked by walnut-knuckled hands, served with almond fingernails. I am from the siren promise of salt and vinegar, greasily hot in the wet-nosed air of winter. I ring with the liberty bell of the microwave's ping. I am from a dad, ground in the crush between day and night shift, the assembly line of endurance, exhaustion, duty, devotion. I am from the smell of clinging turf on his rugby studs, the muddy sadness at my reluctance to try pitch into his passion. I am from a mam working two jobs when she didn't sew, or cook, or hoover the house, or dare to close her eyes in sleep, for in dreaming there is destitution. Her stitching time saved mine. I am from the working class, Yaspic solidarity of who do you think you are? Be bold, but don't brag. Get ahead, yet know your place. Be brilliant, don't outshine. From the kindness of neighbours, the odd bob for sweets from the dwindling top of the electricity meter. I am from the dissonant, sweaty squeak of a slipping, strangled grip wrapped around a rare, resented job. I am from the grind, the graft of others, and the grateful guilt.
Thank you, Rain.
Before we continue, there's space for about 5 or 6 or 7 people to sit here. So please help yourself if you need them. Next on the open mic, we have Avid? Is it? Avid? What, sorry, what is it? Oh, the D is way off. The D is way off over there. It is David. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm David McLaughlin, and I was writing upside down. So, this is my. I'm from Dublin, and I moved to Cork in 2020 from New York. I've been in New York for 10 years, and so this is kind of a COVID lockdown poem, set in the dreaded Abtran on the Model Farm Road. At the call center, November 2020 to February 2021, the messy black Yaris still parked outside the abandoned unit. Shrubs overtake video cameras. A chair buttresses a fire door like a bulwark against zombies. Silence travels further in the business park semi-deserta along corridors of silver birch. Almost evocative of tree tunnel secondary roads in the Midi or the Spanish Costa, where we don't go. Bands of paint luminous on the hallmarks of the bypassed old main road. An elderly dog walker walks the circuit, car parks linked like lagoons, her assigned daily escape from cocooning. And it is pleasant in Bishopstown to be on site, taking a stroll from the call center outsourced to UK markets, discovering a path in unpruned topiary to another unit among trees. Tunnels only open for children who meet the spirit of the forest in the cartoon film my toddler watches. In a distance year with no creche, she knows the two little girls better than friends, though sometimes still mentions Seppo, Eliseo, Olivia, left behind Brooklyn. The winter trees remember the river sound. Underemployed all autumn in Ballincollig, I watch the treetops, variegated blowing horizons from the one bench that hadn't yet been burnt down on night incursions. Reconstituted from recycled plastic, sign says, and asked, am I back in Ireland? Cork, where I'm not from, evidently. Lost the park days now, these away from desk, severely pruned 7-minute piss breaks, headset, toggle on, toggle off, digital time card, headset, to come now into blackbird territory. Bill, absolute yellow, and black body dripping, black absolutely, low to the ground, under dripping trees. I listen for the river, which is continuous and prone to flood, and listen to tree sounds, which are partially ongoing, rising and falling. What is ongoing, intermittently heard behind and within the trees argument, the buttress dam hidden from view. It is in Dripsy, Lone Dove. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Next up, we have Roxanne.
So this new baby was born an hour and a half before coming here. Constance, it was the first, oh, is it? Can you Sorry. Constance. It was a first name before I discovered it was a noun. That it had such a deep meaning. Constance calls up to continuity, to strength, to firmness. Being constant in one's acts, thoughts, words. Constance is calm, sure of herself, more than I ever will be. She smiles, reassures, heals. She doesn't fail. But maybe the constance I seek lies in my so-called failures, falling over and over, trapped by insecurities, begging to be loved, ending up being used. A natural trait, it seems. Constance has a little sister, Prudence. Was she older? I don't know. It doesn't matter, really. I tend to disregard this one. Why prudent when there's an inner fire within me, longing for action, rejoicing with each new adventure? Why prudent when singing out loud clears the silent street after the last burst has gone? Why prudent when a smile is a bright armor against life obstacles? Constance knows me. She's not afraid like her sister. We go along. She keeps an eye on me, each and every step. Three syllables each. They start and vanish as quickly in a breath, a murmur. They dance and I feel light. I knew a cousin of them, an acquaintance, because I never make my mind to stay in touch. Perseverance. That one is proud. When she enters the room, you can't miss her. She has a mind of her own, fights for what she wants. That's why I can't keep track of the plans she had. I'm too volatile not to move. She's a hard worker. I lack strength, endurance. That's another one. She's temporary. But recently, I met someone. I mean, recently. Somewhere along the past 5 years, our path crossed. She could be an auntie, a godmother, a maid of honor, a best friend, a teacher. People mentioned her to me. I didn't know how to deal with that person, but as it is, she stayed, became part of me without my acknowledgement. She's the final warrior, the silent one, the braver. She completes the three others in an infinite perfect quartet, which lasts forever. She pushed me when I wasn't aware of it. In fact, she still does. She wrapped the duvet around during those sleepless and crying nights. She fed me just enough so that I wouldn't fight it. She brightened the darkness, one so thick it fades away only with prayer. She led me to you. She is resilience. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's always nice to think about that anybody is an hour and a half old. When we were here an hour and a half ago, you know, a lot has happened since then, but not a lifetime. Next up, could we get Stanley Knott, please?
Thanks, Michelle. I'm just about recovered because I thought Roxanne said she had a baby an hour and a half before she came. You know, like, what the fuck? I mean, I know women are powerful things, but Jesus. So I've just finished reading what I think is the latest Nick Cave book. It's a series of interviews he did with a guy called Sean O'Hagan, and it's absolutely fascinating in a number of different ways. He's very detailed on dealing with grief when he lost his son a number of years ago. For those of you who don't know, his son died in Brighton. He went off a cliff while on an LSD trip, and it obviously was a shattering experience to him. But he also talks a lot about his creativity and how he goes about it, and I really, really enjoyed it. So it's somehow, I'm not quite sure how this happened, it just reminded me that the last poem in the collection I recently self-published is a Nick Cave poem. Not sure how that happened. Copies of the book are not with me tonight, due in part to my lack of ability to promote it. but more likely from a lack of interest in it, to be quite frank. This is a dark piece. This is called The Farewell Song. So, and just for those of you who don't know, I write poems using song titles, so this poem is constructed entirely of Nick Cave song titles. And it's quite dark. I make no apologies for that. The darkness is great. It makes you look for the light. The Farewell Song. Push the sky away. Let the bells ring. That lovely creature, the firstborn, is dead. I sat sadly by her side in a candle-lit bedroom when my little doll's faint heart and wide, lovely eyes fell away. Oh, my Lord, when the fight was over, how grief came riding into my arms. And like an idiot prayer, an avalanche of memories crushed me. Her black hair, green eyes, red dress, and the voice. Oh, the voice. That love letter could say a spell 99 ways, carry me breathless and bedazzled to happy birthday capers on sunny sand, watching Alice and Cindy wade in the water in miniskirts. A family story time, another rather lovely thing in the kitchenette, the fable of the brown ape, Mickey Bloody Mouse conversations. Lament rose in shivers with one autumn memory of counting stars in the distant sky on a rainy night in Soho after the lightning bolts of fireworks over the river. And my rambling mind mixed memories of her red dress and the red clock, dolphins and a honeybee on the window, mermaids in the bath in the house beside the church in Tupelo. Hold on to yourself, I said over and over. Hold on to yourself. Falling into a well of misery can't do what must be done. And what must be done must be done. So farewell, my love. Let the bells ring goodbye and cry your death, nor your funeral is the end. Not so long as there is a light in my sad, dark eyes.
Thanks, Sam. You know, January was the month for being sad. We're done with that now. Into spring.
It's always light, as long as you're in the darkness.
That's true. Next up, we have May Jeanette. Yes, welcome.
I just like to start to say I'm new. Listening to all of you guys has been a process of intimidation and inspiration, and more intimidation. Now I think it's all just muddled into nervousness. So I kind of just, to kind of poetry I write is just on the spot. I take out my phone, I write it, don't give too much thought, don't judge me too much. The poem I'll be reading tonight is called So Dad. For anyone who doesn't know, it's an emotional state of melancholic or profoundly nostalgic longing for beloved, yet absent of that something or someone. It's often associated with a repressed understanding that one might never encounter the recipient of longing ever again. So this is my poem. Once I can find it. Hear ye, hear me. Please provide some patience as you read my missive. Try to keep an open mind with compassion as you're admissive. And treat your prejudices and preconceptions as dismissive. It is neither a plea nor a demand, not even a request, but I've been emotionally capable, even with salacious, soft whispers taunting that I'm implacable, emotionally incapable as they laugh at me. Yet I'm only human, I'm not great like Constantine. Unfortunately, I'm more of a libertine, with moral grey so pristine, its muddled mess makes for an interesting reflection. My woes and troubles serenade me when it is a real me I see in a smelted, seemingly melted, muddled mirror. Hear me when I say I ask not for your touch, but I have been brandened, though the Olympic flame burns not for me. So I guess I'll have to bask and bathe this smouldered brand of mine in this restless, relentless smog, with my head spinning, my environment reeling, and my heart feeling. I will laugh neurotically as I'm chemically, comically trying to grab smoke, and smile with tearless silence, holding on to what only makes me sad, as it fills me with its silence so loud.
Thank you, May Jeanette. What a debut! Yeah. Well done. Thanks so much. Next up, we have Patricia Walsh.
This is called Speedway. Deserted by experience, following the thread, the dispense with explosion running deep, the old slatten burn not realized yet, purchasing the one-off event still not likely, silent as the circumstances thereon in. Now wanting on the uptake, stealing windows, excavating other sorrows godlike control, their interest lost in some, leave from the book, following the sentence into the common door, detailing the homespun wreckage of the till. Curtailing a mantra, revealing under slips, lifetime preferred by some if they can't do, loving on probation more real than apparent, a ladylike declaration rolls the loaded dice, screening the failed typology in a tightened nut. Fishing drinks come home, suburban disgrace, obsolete reckonings dance in your eyes. The flat-footed bombings grow easier every year. Asking for a boat, but a wiped clean slate. Fashionable dealings not fair on anyone. Offering the scrapes up through summer cleaning, jettisoning the vindictive, neighbouring on, tracking the water, paid for by your leave, the trite persuasion, the untidy profession, that complicated music doesn't want its catch cry. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Next up, can we get Fionn Rogan, please?
Some of the themes in my five-word poem foreshadowed my poem this evening. I grew up in a small town in County Clare, and I didn't realise what a country bumpkin I was until I went to secondary school in Limerick City. And the title of this poem is a question I was asked when I started in secondary school. So if you know the Limerick accent, kind of tune into that, but I won't do it. Are you a raver or a metler? My new classmates listened for an answer. At 12 years, I hadn't yet chosen a tribe. Adept in silence as survival, I shrugged a non-reply. 1 year later, I brandished Doc Martens, combat trousers and black t-shirts on uniform free Fridays. Trading tapes with my new friends, our voices and guitars detuned as we scrawled on our desks and textbooks the names of our favourite bands. Metallica, Pantera, Deicide. Listening to you was like being stuck in caps lock for my teenage years. Headbanging my way through social situations, I kept hidden my inarticulate heart. A growth in shoe size, but not consciousness, despite hours analysing poems in English class. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Next up, can we get Cedric Baker?
That one doesn't have a title yet. I live in by myself, my mind, my muse, and I, in a polyamory couple, overthinking a better life, thinking over a million wishes, bickering over who cooks, who washes the dishes. She lives in me, only comes at the worst times. Catches me in bed, committing those crimes. She stares, lets the guilt set in. And my mind, on her side, starts nagging. I could do better, be better. A creator, a friend, a man, and a lover. A support to the last hour. I want to cling to my shame, but she snatches that blade. He threatens me with a blame until the self-loathing is stayed. That's how this hostage situation goes. This and the rest is a household situation. Sorry. This and the rest is a household tradition between my mind, my muse, and me. Odd friends, best foes.
Thanks, Cedric. Next up, can we get Alexandra Toth, please? Oh.
So I wrote this poem about 4 years ago when I was around 16. That time, this poem I was actually very proud of. Now I criticize it because that was 4 years ago, I was 16, but like it does hold a special place in my heart. It's about a first heartbreak. It's called Broken Wings. Broken spirit, broken wings. An angel's silent cry since the moon has left her. Thought she could be saved from the suffering, but the absence of the moon slowly kills her. Time shall fix these broken wings, but slowly believing these words deceive her lonely soul. As the days pass and seasons change, she longs for the happiness lost in the past. Searching deeper than the ocean itself for answers where the moon has left her, knowing the moon will never come back to shine a light again through her darkest nights, but the moon can't hear her silent cries. 1,000 feelings swirl in me, like the wind in a hurricane. The moment my eyes met yours, this broken angel cries inside. While she smiles, hiding the pain, disguised as a demon, learning love has a price, a sacrifice. But this angel believes hope dies last.
Thank you so much, Alexandra. And it's a bit of a double-edged sword now, because now that we know the barmaid's a poet, you'll never get rid of us at the end of the night.
My first
I'm sorry, I missed the first one.
Like
you're ready tonight.
I'm proud of the one that I read before. Now I wasn't even meant to stand up. I was like,
no. It was great. Thank you. Next up, we're going to go with Antonio.
Thanks and congratulations to all the wonderful poets who came before me. So my poem is called Perspective on the Bridge. Words never lie. An escape of two lovers on a bridge, closing the eyes from the tiny punctures of the rain. A lamp as old guardian, lighthouse to the urban mariners who have lost their harbor. Echoes of lost songs, empty as the last two portions of McDonald's potato fries. Please do not cross the street outside the white stripes. Stunning sunset on an unusual evening, enough close to Parnell Place. Considering the few seagulls, the sentinels of the sky. I hold your hands, you eat the stars, one by one, reclaiming the rising of the moon. The roofs will take the final shot. Perspective on the bridge, looking for the next summer of the grief and the hot winter of a guilty pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Antonio. Next up, we have Lauren O'Donovan, please.
Thank you very much. So this poem was about a time over 10 years ago when I was going to UCC and I lived about 10 minutes over there and I worked next door in Webb Workhouse, and it's called Home. Remember when we lived at Summerhill South in that bungalow with the yellow walls and concrete floors the landlord dug up to trace a leak, opening the arteries of the house and creating canals for us to leap over on the way to the toilet at 2 a.m. The first night in our room, we couldn't get to sleep because of loud people stumbling home from pubs, leaning on each other or into the heat of an argument, until the buses rose at dawn, rumbling out of the depot and shaking our single pane windows in the frame. It was in that house I quit my job by text message in the morning from bed. The job my dad had got for me teaching English to Spanish students. The same house that Frankie sold hash out of, and we all smoked too much to keep our ghosts quiet. The house where we broke up for the first time at Halloween on the way home from freak scene after that American girl from college vomited green tequila all over the dance floor. But the next day, neither of us could recall what was said, only how we made each other feel. And about a year after we moved out, remember, we met those lads in the club who invited us back to their gaff. But it turned out it was our house at Summerhill South, except the floor was fixed under new thick carpets, the walls were all repainted white, and our bedroom was now a brand new living room with a new couch that didn't eat you or have notch burns in the arms. They welcomed us in, those lads who had stolen our life without realizing. But as I sat in our old bedroom, the party pulsing, I couldn't breathe. And my stomach started swinging. So I scrambled over all the strange legs and burst out the front door. You followed, phone out, ready to call a taxi, saying, "Do you want to go home?" Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Love it. So we have two readers left, and if you haven't read and you think maybe I will actually, then you're more than welcome to after that. So our penultimate reader is Billy Ramsell.
Thanks, Mel. This poem, I'm working on it at the moment, and it's written in the voice of a Catalan poet called Alberto Sanes. And in this poem, he brings a clock to be repaired to a clock shop. The clockmaker is Senor Armiñol. And you can find the clock shop on Calle Corsega in Barcelona, if you want. Corsica Street. The poem is called, well, I don't know actually, but it might be something to do with clock. Fundamentals of clockwork? But, all right. So, I hand her mantel clock to Senor Armiñol. It's unreliable, my mother insists. For several months now, it's been keeping poor time. It's a cake of porcelain and privilege. Yadro, limited, late 1970s, bedecked with petals, with cupids arrogantly hovering. But how pitiable it looks, poor clock, one Senor Armiñol slides its back panel off. suffering such exposure, its innards, its vulnerable workings all on view. Senor Armiñol puts his thin, ingenious finger to the pendulum, retarding it just so, or nudging it delicately into the future. He addresses the slow, bewildering nest of clicking gears, sets his pin vise to the driving weight, tempers the anchor in an act of grace and balance. I'm winding down. Oh, clocks, there is no need to deny it. For several years now, I've been keeping poor time. One senses it, deep in one's person, sundry wet and nameless mechanisms, chugging, chugging, engaging ever more grudgingly. O clocks that gong through this atelier, O cuckoo clocks spun with ridicule, grandfather clocks at the ready with mahogany pronouncements, O clocks, dear clocks, deny it. Don't confirm for me that I'm lagging further and further behind the world. Tell me it's the world that needs adjusting. I'm not finished yet. I was thinking about ending it there, but I'm going to add another verse, right? Like, I thought I had to bring back the guy. But maybe that's not the right thing to do. I don't know. You never know. Like,
bring it back.
Go on. Senor Armiñol, with decisive screws, restores our clock's back panel. He besets me with a level stare, his judgment unsparing, perhaps, but accurate to the second. He tuts and sighs. Oh, the clockman, he sees deep into each mechanism. Oh, the clockman knows what time it is. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Billy. Was that our first time seeing a freestyle verse at the end?
No,
it wasn't freestyle. I wouldn't put it past you. No. Finally, or maybe not finally, depending on how you feel, we have Sublu, please.
Thanks very much. Before I kick off with my poem, I would like to invite whoever, as in, we have three more places left for next week's first Blue Monday's in-person meeting since. So we are meeting here, actually. This will be our new home on every third Monday of the month, 6 to 9 p.m. But we can only have 10 people in the room, so it's workshopping, it's not audience. And there are three more places on the list, and I'll need those names until the Sunday before next Monday, so until Sunday 19th. Yeah, so thanks very much for that plug-in. And I shall read my poem, which it was actually prompted by a UCC prompt for, like, was it an anthology or something? I didn't get into it, but I still like this poem. Blue is the color of distance. Ice gleams like a palace beyond the endless white, refracting golden light. The attraction of remotest distance in the cold blue of reflected skies. Corroding the need for heat, it rheumatizes telescopic elbows to miss the stretch for embrace. Curl back to painful source and hold the breath of the cold. Alone within and without, blue is the color of distance. We freeze and hug ourselves, avert our eyes from gleaming ice to soothe the solar pain burning. Skin glistens icicle blue, the breath stands frozen still, no more longing for remoteness. Arms held out to hollow emptiness. Blue is the cutting of human ties.
Thanks, Sue. Have we got anybody else that would like to read a poem?
Fergus,
go for it.
Bless, this is oldish, and I had forgotten it. And then I conjured it up again recently, and I realized I liked it. So this one is called Conversation with the Vampire, not to be confused with Interview with the Vampire, which is a novel by Anne Rice and was turned into an Oscar-winning movie by Neil Jordan and starred Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Christian Slater, Antonio Banderas, and all the way from Belfast, Stephen Ray. But that's got nothing to do with my story, so take all those images out of your head right now. I wouldn't like you to be confused. And also, I wouldn't like Neil Jordan ringing me up in the morning calling me a plagiarist, because I don't like being called a plagiarist in the morning. It's way too early for me. So if you're ready, here it goes. It's the the special director's cut, actually. This is box set, Blu-ray edition, HD ready, 3D ready. Are you ready for Conversation with the Vampire? In 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, I was living alone in cold, freezing rented accommodation, waking up in the middle of the night, freezing cold, all on my own, contemplating living for the rest of my life in cold, freezing rented accommodation. So I went into my bank and I said, any chance of a small mortgage for a small house with maybe a small shed of, like, we don't do things like that. He said, we only do big mortgages for two or many more. We get four houses. Use your head, he said. Get 20 beds, throw them into a house with 20 foreign fellows, 20 of their sisters. They'll pay the mortgage for you. Carp yourself on. Think like a banker. Excuse me, I said. I do not want to think like you. I do not want to live like a vampire, I said. If I was a vampire, I said, I'd retire. I'd be like Brad Pitt, I said. I'd live in a chicken shack. I'd suck on rats, but I don't want to be a vampire, active or retire. I came in here, I said, looking for a small mortgage, for a small house, and maybe a small shed on the back. Would you know what? I said, I've changed my mind. I don't want the shed. Heaven forbid, I said. I'd wake up some morning, look out the back, and find Brad Pitt living in my shed with vampires sucking on rats. I do not want Brad Pitt living in my shed, I said. And I refuse, absolutely refuse to have Tom Cruise anywhere near my shed. That fella's off his head. I saw Cruise interviewed on Oprah. I've heard his views. He believes we are descended from aliens. Aliens, I said, for God's sake. Bad enough having Brad in the shed with the vampires and the rats and crews pouncing around doing cartwheels, acting a crap, but I draw the line with aliens in my shed. I've got standards, I said. And so has the health and safety officer with North Tipperary County Council. He'd have my Leroy D in a sling for that. He'd be up on my back reading me the Riot Act about multiple breaches of the Health and Safety Act. And quite frankly, I've got enough shite in my life without that. I came in here, I said, looking for a small mortgage, for a small house with maybe a small shed out the back. A small shed, I said. Not an intergalactic shed. Not some place for Tom Cruise to entertain his friends from outer space. Not some handy outside location for Neil Jordan to shoot some iffy adaptation starring for the umpteenth time. Stephen Ray again. Looking all lost and confused again. I do not want Stephen Ray looking lost and confused in my shed. I came in here, I said, looking for a small mortgage, for a small house, or maybe a small shed out the back. Forget it, I said. Forget it. I don't want the mortgage. I don't want the house, and I sure as hell do not want a shed that's so jam-packed you can't even swing a cat, with Pitt making no sense whatsoever talking to his top hat to Christian Slater, telling him no end of cock and bull stories about hanging out with colonies of vampires sucking on colonies of rats, with a colony of aliens hanging out of the rafters in pods, being entertained by Tom the Lula Cruise. And the health and safety officer from North Tipperary giving me dog's abuse. And Stephen, God help us, Ray, looking all lost and confused. And Antonio. I'm so absolutely gorgeous. Banderas! Wearing a ridiculous pawn shop Halloween wig that even a 2-year-old child could not possibly believe was real. And Neil, I'm so deep. Jordan, being all introspective and subjective with a camera up his yim-yam, making mythical movies about inner conflict and ambiguous identity. Oh, for God's sake, I said that. Shed was meant for me, and only me, to do things with myself in privacy. Do I have to spell it out? I said privacy, without half the galaxy looking at me, without Jordan shouting out action every time I go out into my shed, without the master of metaphor making hidden meaning movies of me with my alter ego hanging out and beaming the pictures up to planet Zog. I do not want to be the first interplanetary skin flick superstar with pictures of me being beamed far out into space. I do not want to disgrace my mother, I said. She's 91. 91, I said. She's never seen an intergalactic skin flick, and I don't want her to see one. Sure as hell do not want her to see her son starring in one with my alter ego hanging out, and I definitely do not want to be voted number one on the late night arty farty movie charts up on Planet Zog. Who do you take me for at all? I said, obviously, you have one serious problem with your ears. You have not heard one single word I said. Well, listen to me now, listen to me good. Get it through your blood-sucking, money-lending head. I came in here looking for a small mortgage, for a small house and maybe a small shed out the back. Cancel that, I said, completely. Just give me a tiny, tiny, tiny term loan. I'll buy me a one-man tent instead. I've got principles, I said, and I walked out of there not long after that with my head held high. And in my pocket, I had enough money to buy me a small country and half a dozen housing estates. And that, my friends, is what makes this country
great. Anyone want to talk that through? Would you like to read a poem? Yeah? Go for it.
Rebecca. I wouldn't consider myself a poet, but my boyfriend tends to tell me all the time I am. So
he's probably right.
This one's called Home. And it goes, I made the mistake of telling both myself and the people around me that you felt like home to me, which at the time was very true. You did genuinely feel like home to me. Although growing up, home for me was a place to be fearful in. It was a place where walking around on eggshells to avoid conflict was normal. It was a place I wanted to get away from rather than somewhere I would love to be. It was a place filled with tears, screaming, slammed doors, objects being broken and thrown around. It was unsupportive and not very loving. It felt normal to me to not want to come home. It was normal for me to feel anxious because I would never know what awaited me at home. So yes, you felt like home to me. I would mistake that as a good thing, a good sign that it was good for us to be together. In the end, that was never the case. I only realized that when I was laying in his arms and I was thinking to myself how safe I felt, how I was never walking around on eggshells to avoid conflict, and how I never once was ever fearful of him. It was peaceful, loving, and safe, which made me think of the sentence, I would say you feel like home to me, but unlike home, you've always felt safe to me, which in turn made me realize that the times I felt like you were home was never a good thing. You didn't feel safe, loving, or peaceful. You felt just like the home that was so scary to me. You felt like the home where I could never relax because I would forever be on high alert. So I'm glad he doesn't feel like home to me, because I wouldn't want him to. I want him to feel like the home I never had, the home that is safe, loving, peaceful, and supportive. The home that I can't wait to get back to every single time, which is exactly how it is.
Thank you, Rebecca. Was that another debut?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks so much. Anyone else among you? I think so. No. Or Shane.
Another day.
Yeah. I wasn't going to, but now I am. So this poem is about hanging on to something, clutching onto something that should be well gone. It's called Inside Pocket. I do not wear it now, his coat. Within the oxblood lining, there is an inside pocket, and in it I hide his voice. I used to slip my fingers in and take it out, watch the soft palate undulating, enunciating the misshapen words he once gave me. I would hold it up to my ear, hear its bending rhythm, its pace as steady as a shovel slicing earth. I placed it under my nose once, inhaled its sound. Its smell lay somewhere between pipe, tobacco, and honey suckle scented rain. But I wanted more. His tone, his fluency, his articulation. To feel the rush of air through his vocal cords, for my voice to become his. So I pushed it into my mouth. It sat there, balanced on my tongue for a moment before my throat tickled, then tightened. I tried to swallow, but only stuttered. My mouth gaped open like an unfilled grave. Before the words let and go plummeted out. Caught for breath, I coughed it up. It landed on the floor, broken. I do not wear it now. His coat. Within the oxblood lining, there is an inside pocket, and in it I hide his voice stitched shut.
Unless anyone runs and tackles me. Oh, Jim! Yeah. Jim, run and tackle me. Come on.
It's all happening, though.
I haven't read this in years, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of cute. It's called On Being a Vampire.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Go on, Jim.
I came out when I was 45 years old. I was tired of keeping beauty secrets. You too can have eternal youth if you've got money for Botox. Or if you sell your soul off to Satan, who's a cross-dresser, who stitches pure white souls together and wears them for a living chiffon gown that howls and raises eyebrows all around the seven circles of hell. When I told my mother, she insisted on Christian conversion camp. My eyes rolled so hard I could see God. It was then I decided to say that I also like men. I moved to the Lower East Side, where nobody notices vampires. I got a studio apartment and became very depressed. I found company on Grindr, invited one guy over for Netflix and chill. We lay down in the dimly lit room. Light poured from the laptop playing Nothing Hill. When I smelled the rust of his blood, it was Netflix and Kill. The next day, shame rained on me. I had nowhere to turn. I decided on Alcoholics Anonymous. The only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. Plus, their blood smells terrible. I shared that it's easy to be lonely when your friends are human. An old black lady, in recognition. We talked over coffee in styrofoam cups. I heard it works if you work it. Thank you.
And as per usual, to cap off our 681st Ovale, we will go to mains for maybe a glass of wine, cup of tea, bit of cheese, whatever you fancy. So see you there and see you next month. Thanks, William.